Real quick though, what are those Funko Pops behind you?
Okay, so most of these are like horror related Funko Pops. I have a bunch more over here. Like the icons are over here, like Leatherface and Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, those are all over there. This is the leftovers. So we got a little bit of Ghostbusters, but I don't know. Got Dracula's over there, Norman Bates, we got Patrick Bateman, The Witch, some Evil Dead stuff. Recently got the new Candyman. So I tried to stay niche when it comes to those kind of things, because when they first started to get really big, you'd see them all over. Like, you'd see the Game of Thrones ones and the Batman ones. And I'm like, if I get like one Star Wars Funko Pop, then I'm going to have to spend way too much money on like 300 other ones. So if I limit my my list to like horror stuff, it's a lot easier to only buy them like once every like couple months if they come out with new ones. And I'm fairly caught up on the ones that I want to get. So it's now, you know, every once in a while they're like, oh, this is coming out. And I'm like, cool, I'll pick it up. It's like $10.
So would you say like horror is kind of your jam when it comes to movies and stuff?
It definitely has become so in the last like 2 years. I've always liked scary movies. I think most people can say as they grow up, love watching scary movies, but I have delved deep in the last couple years into like 60s horror, some of like the Hammer horror stuff with Christopher Lee, and then Arrow Video, company out of the UK, does a really great job of like preserving like cult films, and so I delved deep into their company and have bought a lot of really good releases from them. Some really niche stuff like The Chill Factor. It's like an 80s like B horror movie, to stuff like Carrie and like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. If I would have watched some of those films like years ago, I probably would have like left the movie or finished the film thinking that was really lame. That was like nothing holds up. And now my appreciation has kind of shifted, and I've come to really enjoy 70s and 80s campy horror with the really awesome practical effects, the really terrible ones. Some of them are genuinely terrible and are not even entertainingly terrible, but some of them are so bad that they're good. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. But yeah, essentially to answer your question, horror is kind of my jam in terms of film. But I've gone through phases, like, you know, I went through my foreign film phase, and I've gone try to delve deep into all the big name directors and stuff. But yeah,
what was your first introduction to horror?
Oh gosh, the things that I can remember from when I was a kid is something like Signs, which like as an adult now is not like it's pretty spooky still to me. It still freaks me out from time to time, but that's not like it's not like an actual horror film, really. It's more of a sci-fi thriller, right? But as a kid, that stuff like freaked me out. And the only other big ones that I can think of, like The Shining, obviously. Like, I'm sure you were expecting me to say something like The Shining. Everyone says it's their favorite horror movie, but like, it's hard for me to choose anything else. I distinctly remember renting The Shining from a movie rental place when those were still a thing, and watching it in my room with my best friend. And like, that movie still held up. I was still like super just like freaked out. I just like felt funny. But then, you know, over the next year, two, three, I delved deep into Kubrick and, you know, like other, like 2001 Space Odyssey is probably my favorite movie. But yeah, I would say The Shining is probably the one that kind of really, pulled me into that world. And again, it wasn't until a couple of years ago until I started trying to get into like a lot of the big franchises like Halloween and Friday the 13th. And I was pleasantly surprised with, you know, I was making my way through the Friday the 13th films. I was like, these keep getting worse. But once I finished watching them all, like, I am more in love with that franchise than any other horror franchise. Like, Halloween is like very meh to me. There's a couple really good entries, but other than that, I'm really indifferent about it. I've come to really enjoy Candyman as a character. Texas Chainsaw is probably one of the most confusing franchises because, like, I feel like it would be so easy to make it good. Like a mask wearing maniac with a chainsaw sounds like it could be consistently great all the time, and it's just not, you know.
Yeah, and I thought with that new one, they had cool ideas where I'm like, oh, you have the idea groundwork, but you know, it was a weird execution, but it was still an entertaining film to a degree.
Is one of the more graphic ones, which I think is honestly that's why horror fans go to see those movies now for someone like Leatherface or Jason and for the gore. Like, we're usually pretty content when the story is shit, but it always helps if you can go see a movie that's like frightening, graphic as hell, and super well made. And like, I think of films like Hereditary. I have my poster back here, as you can see.
Love
Like,
Hereditary, dude. It's like my top
it's
horror film.
absolutely, man. Like, I watched it so many times in the theaters, and I was blown away. And it's been rare to see films have that type of effect on you in the last that have come out in the last like 10 years. Like, every now and then there's some that will linger with me. Hereditary like infected every part of my brain, and I was like, this is proof that you can. And a lot of people still talk about like how messed up that movie is. Like, they're like, dude, that movie messed me up. And I'm like, yeah, it's because it's powerful filmmaking, and he didn't hold anything back, you know. Like, I freaking love that movie, dude. It's so good.
Yeah, I've tried to convince some of my coworkers to watch it, but they don't like horror. So I have to be like, oh no, it's a family drama, right? Like,
It is,
it's a
but
straight family drama film
it
that has
totally
a
is.
wild ending.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, those are good picks, man. Okay, well, let's have you introduce yourself real quick so we can put a voice to the face and all that fun
Sure.
stuff.
Yeah, my name is Dallin Crone. My stage name as a performer is Pepperoni Prada. I make satirical rap music. And that description has changed for myself, you know, as the years have gone by, because I've started to take what I do more and more serious, which I should be happy to expound upon later as we talk. But yeah, I've created this persona who is an Italian food themed rapper who wears Adidas, despises pineapple on pizza, and I feel like just scratching the surface is enough to kind of give you a general idea of what I am as a performer. I also play drums in a band called Whippin' Shitties. That's a fairly new development. They've been around in the music scene here for a while when I was doing other projects, and recently invited me to play with them. So we've been playing some shows, small tours. But yeah, other than that, I'm a music enthusiast, film enthusiast, horror enthusiast, and that's pretty much me. I also on the side do a little content creation for a platform called Music Board. It's very similar to Letterboxd, if any of your listeners are familiar with that, but for rating and reviewing music. And so I work closely with a gentleman in Sweden who kind of started that, and it's pretty much me and him, and I help write content for that and make sure it's kind of clean and organized to the best we can for the level that we're at. So
What's it called again?
Music Board,
Music board.
one word.
Is there an app for it?
Yep, there's an app for it. The app works a little bit better than the web version, but
Okay.
you can do both. Pretty
It's,
intuitive.
I mean, it's kind of like Letterboxd too, where Letterboxd is like all HTML based on its web version, whereas it's
Right.
easier to do stuff on your phone.
Right, exactly. Yep. I do both. Like, I'll do a lot of the organization stuff just to see it on my computer, but when I'm using it casually to review and rate stuff and read things, I'll do it on my phone.
Yeah, dude. So I actually one of your songs popped up in my playlist the other day. It's Gang, that
Nice.
song.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in my liked playlist. So whenever that
Heck
comes on,
yeah.
I'm like, this is baller, dude. And it's funny you said it was satirical because I'm like, it's actually really fucking good.
Thanks, man. You know, it's been interesting kind of developing this project. When I was in college, just like for fun, I like made some rap music. Some of it was serious and some of it was not serious. And I like put the serious and non-serious songs like in the same project. And I don't know, like the obvious inspirations when I was a kid that I would listen to a lot of is The Lonely Island. That's like a no-brainer. Like, but what I as I've gotten older, and instead of thinking like, oh yeah, they're cheesy or whatever, like I think they are as like comedic actors, they are amazing lyricists for like the types of songs that they write, and their production choice is always like flawless.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were able to work with so many like big name artists like Snoop and Kendrick, you know, it's huge. And so I stopped making music for a little bit, at least rap music. And I started a YouTube channel called Pepperoni Prada. The YouTube channel, I guess, technically exists. It's still the channel that I use for my artist, but it's kind of a completely different direction than what I initially wanted to do with it. My buddies were both servers at an Italian restaurant, and there was a mural inside the restaurant that said al dente. I still have yet to see it, actually. I haven't seen this mural, which is a shame. But they came to me and they said, hey, we're starting a rap group called the Al Dente Boys. And I was like, okay, cool. That's cool. So they came up with Versace Linguini and Gucci Stromboli as their rap names. And I thought about it for a while and I was like, okay, I'll be Pepperoni Prada. Yeah, that's who I'll be. And we never made anything out of it. Like, they don't necessarily make rap music. And I'd kind of stopped making rap music, but I wanted to do similar to your podcasts in that I wanted to like sit down with musicians or artists, filmmakers, models, whoever, and like get a slice of pizza or something and just like talk about their art in different pizza places and do like little pizza reviews. So I did 3 episodes and I just kind of like fell out of it. I was like, I don't know if this is like super sustainable for me, or if it is, it's not the right time for me to do it. And I was out and about downtown with a friend and they said, how's the Pepperoni Prada thing going? I remember you used to like do rap in college. Why don't we just like try something? Like, why don't you just try to make a song as like an al dente boy, like as Pepperoni Prada? I was like, okay, I'll try it. So I went over to their place and they made a beat up for me real quick. And we made the first single that I put out, which is called Call Me Lil Pep. And then we made 5 more songs and a couple skits, and I put it in like a little mixtape project and released it. And I was pleasantly surprised with the results. And in the same reaction that you had to Gang, and that it is satirical, I had some friends check it out and they're like, you know, like, it's interesting that it's a pizza rap project, but it's pretty good. And I was like, thanks. And then I made another project that was a 5-track EP and kind of took my roots back to some like boom bap type of rap. And then I worked for about 2 years on my newest project that Gang is on. Hey, It's Lil Pep, that came out like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of developed and continued to grow up to this point, which has been really, really cool. So,
yeah, I mean, because a lot of it kind of reminded me of like Lil Dicky, you know, where the songs can have a lot of humor to them, but like it's really talented how it's conveyed. And so I don't know, dude. I think it's pretty cool.
Thank you. Yeah.
So when you're coming up with songs, then like how exactly, like what do you look for before you start writing a song? Like, do you kind of try to free flow it, or how do you go about that?
That's a great question. I actually think part of my process reflects, this might be more of a complicated answer than you are hoping for, but
let's go for it.
at least in the rap world, a lot of artists at my level are more interested in releasing small projects frequently. So they'll release a single and then maybe a couple months later, another single, a couple months later, maybe an EP. However, I wanted to put out music in a way that reflected the artists that I listened to. And a lot of the artists I listen to, they're all obviously like commercially successful. And so usually they'll have an album cycle, you know, they'll release a single or two or three, and then they'll put out a project. And then it'll be a couple years, maybe a year, until they do the same thing again, a couple singles and then a project. And so the first mixtape that I made was kind of just a random collection of songs, because like many artists can probably attest to, when you first start a project, and I think it could apply to anything, you don't necessarily know exactly how you're going to do it or how it works best for you. So you just kind of try things. And if the way you try it the first time works out, you continue to develop it upon, you know, that strategy. And so the first group of songs was kind of just like writing what I could, just like coming up with random ideas, like, okay, I'll make a song about Sprite. I'll make a song about, and this brings up another point of conversation. You know, a lot of people have been like, you're going to run out of ideas. Like, you're a pizza themed rapper. Aren't you going to run out of things to say? And I don't necessarily know the answer to that, but I try to just find very, very specific things to talk about. Like, I have a song called Cowboy, and I have a song called Hungry. And I have a song called Moon. You know, like, I try to be niche with those ideas, but the first couple songs were kind of like a shotgun of random ideas, see if it worked. It seemed to work okay. The second round, when I made my EP, was I had a friend who said, I have these 5 beats. Do you want to use them in a project? And I liked them all. And so then I just tried to structure them in a way that felt like it flowed cohesively. And then I just kind of wrote to it. I don't know, with Boom Bap, it's a lot easier. So I tried to be a lot more like Italian American gangster, like Goodfellas and The Sopranos, you know, centered around that. And then with this new project, it was kind of a mix of both. I knew I wanted a 10-track project. And so I started looking for all the beats that I wanted. And while I was looking for all these beats, I was also coming up with just the titles of the songs. I was like, Mario, that would be cool. He's an Italian. Cowboy, let's try that. Spoopy, let's write something related to like something scary and spoopy and creepy. And just kind of came up with these big, you know, one word song titles. And then, you know, you start to connect the dots between, I'm like, okay, this maybe works best for this song. And it was a lot of that over years, you know, 2 years of just kind of connecting the dots. And then, you know, yeah, I think for me, it's song title first and then the content second. Every now and then I'll write verses and then try to put a song title to that. But anyway, I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. How many takes does it usually take you? I mean, recording a song, you know, because I imagine like when you first started out, I mean, it's probably a lot more than what you do now. Because, you know, it's a kind of, it's probably new, right? I'd imagine.
I think it depends. Like with my earlier projects, I felt like my time was limited because I didn't want to waste like my producer's time or the engineer's time. So I'm like, okay, and then you start to psych yourself out when you're trying to do it in a time crunch. And that's the one thing that I would always change is stop putting a time constraint on myself. I found that if I say I'm going to put a project out in December, and I don't even have it finished yet, now I'm going to be scrambling to get something put together. And I may or may not be like fully content with it. And I want all the time in the world. But yeah, when I was first starting out, it was not as many as you'd think, but I think I could have done better. And with this most recent project, me and my like producer and engineer like worked tediously to get it as good as we could. And sometimes the takes on my part would be great after like 3 or 4 tries. And then a couple weeks would go by and we'd listen to it. And he would be like, hey, I have a couple different like plugins that I want to run your voice through. And he would try it. And he's like, okay, I think we found the perfect sound for you, but I think we should re-record your vocals like one more time. And after like 2 years of working on those songs, you would think that those songs became like memorized in the back of my head. And I do have to write all my lyrics down. And when I'm like preparing for shows, there was a big festival up here, Tree Fort Music Festival, happened a couple months ago, and I was preparing for that. And there were many instances when I was rehearsing by myself that I forgot my words. I was just like, I don't remember what I wrote here because I like had finished some songs years ago and haven't touched them again until now. So I think it's changed a little bit. It also depends on the situation or the circumstance that I am recording in. But I think one thing I've learned is I can't put a timestamp on something if I don't know if I'm ready to go. I think I always want to make sure the door's open and be able to make as many tweaks as I want. But I think on the flip side of that, you know, they say that there's 2 types of people. There's people who continue to rewrite, like they'll write and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite, but then they'll never publish anything.
Yep.
So you have to be able to find that perfect balance of writing or creating to a certain point and being comfortable with putting it out there. You're always going to go back and critique your work. I could have done this better. I could have done that better. I think all artists and creatives can attest to that. However, you learn from each time you make a film or every time you make an album or a painting. And I think it just makes your next set of work even better because you know what to do different.
So when you first performed live as your rap status, mm-hmm. how did that go?
It was good. But it was so different from what I've experienced in the past. Like I've been playing music since I was 10. I've been performing in front of people since I was probably 14 or 15, but I was always playing the drums.
Oh, you were playing drums. So was it more like indie music you're used to playing or rock
music? Yeah, a little indie music. I was in a post-rock band, nice. A little bit of punk in high school. I was in a Blink-182 cover band, done a bunch of different things. I played jazz all through high school and college. So performing wasn't the issue. Getting in front of people, that's not the problem. But the difference is now, I'm on the drums in the back. And so if I mess up, I can usually get away with it. And doing this, I am the show. Even if I have a DJ or even if I were to be playing with a drummer, I'm still the show. And I have to carry everything with my energy and with the lyrics themselves. And it was a completely different thing. I couldn't just rely on sitting on the drums, right? I tried to be as confident as I could, which was hard. And I think, the pre-show anxiety, I'm sure many people can relate to that, even in sports. I ran track and field and I was like, oh yeah, I got this. And the 2 minutes between when I would walk onto the track and get down on the blocks when they say ready, set, those are the worst moments of my entire life. That's when my heart starts racing the most. But then once you're in the race, you kind of forget, those feelings you just had 30 minutes ago. And that's kind of how it's been performing live as well. I don't know if that'll ever go away. Anticipating getting up in front of people and performing and thinking, what are these people going to think? Am I going to start the show clean? Is it going to be, whatever it is. But then once I'm about, 45 seconds or a minute into my first song, I usually kind of forget about that anxiety. The worst thing that happens is in between songs, I have to say stuff, right? And I actually try my best to organize songs in a way. There's some skits in between my songs or at the end and beginning of some of them. And I use that time to just take a breather, get a drink of water, kind of pace the stage and let people listen to those and add to the, kind of narrative experience or whatever. And then every once in a while, I'll have something to say. But that's the most daunting, I think, is getting ready to go on and talking in between songs. But then you wonder why you psyched yourself out in the first place after you get off. Regardless if people say it just to be nice or whether they genuinely had a good time, you get off and they all say, hey, you killed it, or dude, your stage presence is unreal. And that was one thing that was shocking, is I didn't feel like I was doing anything extraordinary or different. I'm just a fan of performing, and I've watched people perform, and I inherently know what I should or shouldn't do for myself at least. But they're like, yeah, dude, you killed it. Your energy is unmatched. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. It doesn't feel like I'm doing anything, out of the ordinary. But it's those moments where I'm like, oh yeah, I did awesome. I don't know why I worried about it. And that was, months ago when I performed at Tree Fort, and I have a show coming up next week in Salt Lake, and I'm, my brain is slowly starting to do the same thing. It's like, oh, you're going to a new city. You don't know any of these people. In Idaho where I live, people are going to show up that know your stuff and they're going to hype you up. But now you have to the only person that knows your stuff is your DJ, right? And you just hope that the people that are there who have no idea who the hell you are, vibe with what you're doing. So
where are you playing in Salt Lake?
Let's see. So I think Thursday the 26th is at Quarters, which is at the DLC, which is I think it's a venue portion of an arcade bar in Salt Lake.
Oh yeah. It's, I think it's by the Green Pig.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I haven't been there yet. So apparently Quarters has been around for a little bit, but
yeah.
The DLC, which is their performance center, is a little bit new. And then I'll be back in Salt Lake again next month to perform at the Loading Dock, which I've also not been at.
The Loading Dock? Is that... Oh, that's it. Is that the same thing as the Depot, or is that different?
Different from the Depot, but I've seen some pictures, and it looks pretty industrial, kind of like the Underground, if any of your listeners are familiar with what the Underground was in Salt Lake a couple years ago.
That's cool, so, man. Yeah. Quarters is cool. And before the pandemic, I went there a few times. I didn't know they had a concert attached to it now. I guess it was newer. So
yeah,
that makes sense. But I mean, because some of the local bands I follow, like they've been posting there lately or recently too. I'm like, wait, what? Like,
Dick, what is that?
That's when. But it makes, I mean, it's such a young, hip place anyway, you know, to get drinks and chill out and stuff. I mean, it totally makes sense to have local bands come and play and, you know, vibe.
I think it's going to be a perfect fit. The venue that I played at Tree Fort was also an arcade bar. I've had a few songs of mine played on Radio Boise, and I don't know. Like I said before, as I've come along doing this project, I've started to just say, yeah, you know, like I make rap music. But the one thing that I feel like does separate my art from other rappers is this is not to say, you know, anything against other people who make rap music. If they have like their system and their flow of doing things, like by all means, I'm kind of rambling here. The radio station, after they played my songs, were like, oh, this is kind of interesting. It's kind of like nerdcore, which is the last thing that I would have called my music.
Nerdcore?
Yeah, like MC Lars or Mega Ran, like usually rappers who just like rap about really nerdy things like video games or anime and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, okay, I can see that. Like, that's not necessarily exactly what I was going for, but if that's what, you know, these radio hosts like took it as, that's fine. And so, you know, I have a song on my project called Mario, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people who enjoy my music do enjoy playing, you know, video games or watching cool movies. So there's, you know, it is a little nerdy for sure, because it's not thug. You know, I don't know if I could get away with being thug. But my album release party and performance was at an arcade bar, and I think it just like worked out perfect. The vibe was awesome with, you know, with all the machines, and so I'm super stoked to be able to play at the DLC. I think it's going to be like a perfect natural transition into playing shows outside of my local scene. So
yeah, well, it's interesting that you said that you don't know anybody here, because I thought, because you and I met years ago.
Years ago. Yeah.
But I mean, it was in, you know, you lived in Utah at one point. Like, am I not mistaken?
I did.
In that?
Yeah, I did. No, we hung out a few times. We have some mutual friends too, playing some bands. I think, you know, Josh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Josh plays in a handful of projects. Initially I'd actually reached out to his band, shout out to Future Ex-Boyfriend, if they wanted to play a show. I think they're pretty tied up with doing some stuff, but like, yeah, I guess you're right. I can't say that I don't know anybody. Like, my family lives south of Salt Lake. But I think because I don't know of my friends who live in Salt Lake, who's going to come to the show or who even vibes with my stuff or knows that I'm doing it. It's just one of the unknowns, you know, for the 4, 5, 6 times that I played in Idaho. I mean, there was that stretch of time when we had the pandemic was really severe and we couldn't perform at all. I played like 2 shows before the pandemic and then just focused on music while I couldn't perform. But I've had like, you know, maybe 7 to 10 people who are consistently at all my shows, and they always show up, and they're troopers for like listening to the same shit every show, you know, and they love it, which is awesome. It gives me a lot of confidence in thinking like, you know, if these people, regardless if they're my friends or not, if they can vibe with it this hard, I'm sure that there's other people who will vibe with it just as hard. So
yeah, man, it's fun. Like, when I heard your song come on, I was going to the grocery store and it's fucking hot here. It's like, you know, windows are down. I just like turned up the radio and I was just sitting there at a red light, you know, just the bass boosting.
Right. It's weird. Yeah, I don't know. Sorry. I don't know where my thought process was going there.
Oh, you're good. So with that, I It's interesting that you said that. You know, you kind of go through that phase, like the 20 seconds before, 30 seconds before you start playing, right? Because recently I saw on, I think it was TikTok, James Hetfield of Metallica addressed his anxiety to the crowd
on stage, right?
On stage, yeah. And he's like, you know, I'm just some old man who can't play anymore. I'm like, what?
And he's James Hetfield.
It's James fucking Hetfield. Yeah. I mean, what? You're like one of the greatest, you know, bands of all metal. I mean, like, so it's cool to see that. It's a very common thing that, you know, like you said, all performers can relate to.
I mean, I would assume that it applies even to, you know, outside of the performative genres, like film. Like, I can't even imagine, you know, there's so much work that goes into making a film, and it all culminates on like a premiere night, and you're like, okay, how are people going to react to this? And I've only been to a couple premieres. I helped on a couple films, just, you know, doing some small roles. But the scene I always think of in film that maybe is a fictional depiction is in The Disaster Artist, when Tommy Wiseau is screening The Room for people, and people have like such a visceral reaction to his film in the opposite way that he wanted it to be, right? So he's thinking he's making this great, great film, and he's put so much into it, and it turns out it's trash. You know, and he leaves the theater crying, and his best friend comes out there and is like, look, dude, like, this is not the reaction that you were going for, but can't you tell that they freaking love it? And that's a lucky scenario, but like, that fear is real, I think, for everyone. You put so much work into something, and all you want is just for a couple people to connect with it. And sometimes in the social media world, we assume that if people care about it, they follow us or they give us likes on social media, you know, like, growing up in the digital age, we've become so accustomed to like, oh, this, you know, this post got 10 likes and this post got 40 likes, so more people must like this type of content. And although it's easy to read it that way, like, there's like, I would have had no idea that you were listening to my music. And you liking my post or not liking my post has nothing to do with it. But it's really easy to get tied up in those things. And I think like the biggest like aspects of like doubt, if you will, come in the form of, you know, always, you're always, you know, pursuing that thing, and it changes, but you work so hard and you want it to happen a certain way. And sometimes, you know, at least for myself, I'm very impatient, and I feel like what I have so much confidence in what I have, and I think it's a great product, and you put it out there, and, you know, maybe only 20 people interact with it, or depending on what level you're at, maybe only 100 people, whatever it is. And, you know, my friends and family are always reminding me like, hey, that's like 100 people who consistently like your stuff. And those are the people that are going to ride or die with you. You know, you could continue to put music out for 15 years and those people will continue to follow you. But it lingers though, still, like, there is this desire to have it react a certain way with people. And when you don't get that reaction or with the reaction that you expected, it can feel really shitty.
Yeah.
Even if you have made a great product, sometimes it's a matter of just getting the right eyes on it. You know, in this case, ears. But that feeling, I think, has always kind of plagued me as a creator, even since I was little. Like, I used to make like little home movies on my parents' camera. Like, for a while I thought I was going to go to film school, and I was like, I don't know if I want to pay for film school. So I never did, but I'd love to make films in the future probably, but it's, I don't know. I'm sure you can relate the essentially putting something out and not going over the release of it, not reacting the way that you wanted it to, can feel really, really terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, there's I mean, it's been a few years anyway. I need to get over it. But like, when, you know, I released the short a few years ago, granted, there's a pandemic now, so it's kind of hard to get back in the groove of things. But I remember, I mean, there were a couple scenes where people weren't supposed to laugh, but they did.
Right.
And they sat there like, oh, I think it's funny. Cool. Not my intention, but cool, you know? So, I mean, even like doing table reads with scripts, you know, where there's supposed to be a serious dramatic scene. And like if one of the people reading the script, you know, starts laughing during the dialogue because it's kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it forces you to kind of take a step back and look at it from their perspective, but also kind of understand why they might be laughing, you know, like why aren't people driving with your music, you know? And then you have to ask yourself, well, am I trying to cater to them specifically, or can I still stay true to myself and still respect that they might not vibe with it or whatever, you know? Cause I think it's impossible to please everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And even like, if you're lately on TikTok, for example, I've been following this guy who does, what do you want to call it? Super realistic looking drawings, of things, charcoal drawings from photos that he's taken, and they look identical, almost like the real product. Right. But
mm-hmm.
even people in there are like criticizing, like, oh, some of the lines are off, you know, and I'm like, oh, you can't please everybody.
Right.
And it's like the hardest work, and it's impossible to please every single person, you know?
I think there's this perfect balance, because like as artists, when it doesn't go over the way we want to, we definitely try to tell ourselves, oh, I'm doing it for me. I'm doing it for myself. I'm doing it because I love it, which I think there's partial truth in that. Because personally, like I get a lot of satisfaction out of having what I create, like connect with somebody on any level. I know what art, like film and music, has made me feel. You know, I think about the filmmakers that I love. I think about the artists that I love, and it makes me think and feel different things and makes me passionate to do the same thing. And I, you know, my biggest desire is to have stuff that I make do the same thing for other people, regardless of to what extent. If someone's like, hey, I love your music. I love the way, you know, you perform. I like your image. You've inspired me to try it. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. Like, that's awesome. That's so cool. You know, we're not in it for, you know, the awards. We're not in it for the clout. We do it because we want to do it. But I think sometimes as artists, we have to be realistic and think, okay, I can record 20 albums by myself in my house and never release them because I make them for me. And if that's awesome, awesome. But I think it also makes you like think about what industry you're in. Like, even if it is just a passion, the music industry, you know, it's a music industry, it's the film industry, the entertainment industry. People want to eat that content up. And so it is a really weird thing having to balance doing it for yourself and trying to do it for your audience. And that also, I think, has been my hardest thing, is figuring out who my audience is, right? Like, I have very specific things that I watch and listen to. So I'm like, oh, people who like this, this, and this, and this are going to connect with my music. And then you find out that there's people who connect with your music that you did not expect. You're like, oh, wow, I did not expect someone like this to enjoy what I do. And at the end of the day, all I can do is be grateful and excited and continue to find those people who are excited about what I do. Because like even in trying to book shows out of state or at all, people who don't know who I am, when I email a venue or an other artist who might have a very serious art form, you see Pepperoni Prada on the email line, or, hey, my artist name is Pepperoni Prada. I make Italian food pizza wrap. I can totally understand on the surface when that comes through on an email, like, how can you take someone like that serious? How can you do that? And it's those people who have like taken 20 extra seconds to just go like check out even 30 seconds of my music or my image or my merchandise or whatever, and be like, oh, actually this kind of works. I get it now. Like, I understand what he's trying to do. And half the time I'm not even necessarily intentionally trying to be funny. And in a different way of kind of what you were describing, like, you have people read a scene or they watch a scene and they kind of giggle and you didn't expect that. I'll be in the car with my friends playing them new music or listening to old stuff, or they'll listen to my stuff and they're like, yo, dude, this line right here is so funny. And I'm like, wow, I did not think it was that funny. But if you connect with it like that, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of said many different things there. I rambled a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I think too, if somebody listens to your music, like takes time to listen to your music in any form, right? Or takes a minute to watch a scene from your movie or whatever. And if they give you like honest feedback, even if it's not for them, but it's honest, it's still cool. They checked it out and they didn't have to do that. Right. So that's like the flip side of criticism is at least they checked it out. And that's what more could you ask for? You know, I mean, that's the bottom line.
Right. Yeah. I've worked with other artists who, you know, I'm three projects deep now. And I've had people be like, hey, are you ever going to make serious rap music? I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, I don't know. Like you're pretty good at rapping, but like, are you ever going to like come up with like a serious rap name and maybe like make like serious rap songs, which is such a difficult, it's like a kind of like a backhanded compliment almost, at least to me, like, thank you for thinking that I'm a good enough rapper to just like make serious rap music. But I think what is so satisfying about Pepperoni Prada as an identity, as a character and as a project is I get to explore so many different genres of hip hop because I love hip hop so much. But I always felt like I didn't have anything to say. Like I'm like a middle-aged white guy from, you know, the Northwest who grew up in a middle-class family and has never really had any hardship. Like, it's so hard for me to find something to rap about that's serious. Like, this is not a dig at anybody who is a fan of Jack Harlow, but Jack Harlow's most recent album came out, and a lot of the things that I was reading was like, yeah, it sounds cool, but what's he talking about? Like, he has there's no substance there. There's nothing to talk about. And sometimes people think, oh, you know, you don't need to talk about anything specific. It's a vibe. And I think I've grabbed onto that idea and taken the sounds of like all the artists that I love so much that do make really good serious music and channeled it through this character, which gives me, you know, so much more freedom to talk about things that aren't even necessarily me, like a thug guy who is so confident in himself and loves pizza and, you know, like raps about making money and stuff. Like, that's not me at all, but it works so perfectly for this character, and I can explore different subgenres that way. And I think that's kind of why I love doing what I do so much, is it gives me an opportunity to kind of, there is no rules. It's not like there's nothing that's going to stop me from doing this, that, and the other. But to the same extent, I'm very inspired by people like, I mean, we talked about Lil Dicky. He's not even one of my favorite rappers, but I've, you know, watching what he's done, and people like Jordan Peele, you know, like Jordan Peele got so big as an actor, as a comedic actor, huge, right? And he's taken all the resources, and I'm sure like has networked with so many people that he's now become one of the most prolific filmmakers ever. And you look at someone like Lil Dicky, and whenever people would listen to him, they're all like, man, he's so funny, but it's so crazy because he's so good at rapping. Like, he can actually rap really well. And now he has his own TV show. Yep. Like, and has worked with some of the biggest artists in the world. So, you know, people like that are inspiring to me in multiple ways. And that, like, I take the art form itself of what I do is satirical and comedic somewhat in nature, but I take it very serious. You know, I try to treat it, you know, seriously and almost businesslike, in that, like, I care too much about this to just let it flop. And many people are like, dude, I'm surprised you've been able to take this like concept and this idea as far as you have. And I'm like, and I'm just going to keep going until I can't anymore, or until I am ready to take those experiences and, you know, those people who follow me, you know, and network it and turn it around and use it for anything else that I need to, if I need to, like I imagine Jordan Peele did in any other form of music, playing drums in other bands, or maybe if I do want to make films later on, like being the pizza rapper, you know, who got a degree in music, who eventually started making horror films. Like that's stuff that I aspire to do with platforms like this, I think.
And with you having a character, you know, quote unquote, already in like the rap game,
right?
Do you think that kind of enables you to even create new characters down the road, to branch out further with different genres of music at all, or?
Yeah, well, that's I think the hardest part for myself is I love so many genres of music.
Yeah,
is I think Pepperoni Prada could live on in other forms. You know, like right now I'm making rap music, but I've told myself that I'll make a pop album one day. You know, like why not? Like Oliver Tree has done so many things in kind of like a mix of genres, and he's he takes his stuff very serious, but he's also got like this subtle satirical comedic edge to him, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, I would love to like make a pop record as Pepperoni Prada, or Pepperoni Prada goes punk. Like, I don't know, like I can play the drums and play bass. So like, who's to say Pepperoni Prada won't make a punk album one day, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting for the day for where all the OG hip hop fans are like, dude, Pepperoni Prada is making punk now. This guy sucks. But I don't want to be like a Machine Gun Kelly, but you know, to answer your question, I think there is room to explore so much with a character like this. You know, there is no rules. I can do anything, you know, and I've thought about like when you ask people what their favorite food is, like many people will put pizza on the list. You can't go wrong. So that's already a win. It's not such a niche food that people are like, I don't even like sushi. You know, it's all like, oh yeah, I fuck with pizza. Like even if I'm vegan or whatever.
They have vegan pizza.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody likes it. And so, you know, those initial ideas that kind of kicked off Pepperoni Prada as an idea, like having a YouTube channel. I think I told you briefly before we met that I was thinking about delving into the podcast world. I had a podcast years ago. But I think Pepperoni Prada has room to have a podcast with other artists, either as the character or not. I don't know. Like, so yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities. And I think about like the merchandise. People love buying shit with pizza on it, or pizza puns, or like something that has pizza related that's like super thug, whatever. Like, I think there's a world for it, and it's just a matter of finding those people who are interested in vibing with that.
Do you have any main fears about pursuing a Pepperoni Prada?
Years ago, I would have said no. Who cares? And now it's to the point where I've played serious shows.
Yeah,
you know, like I don't want to say I'm a professional, but you know, performing gigs almost as a professional, you know, out of state shows and festivals, where now I still control everything that I want to do with it, but it's almost like it's taking the front seat and has a mind of its own. And a big fear of mine is because it is such a silly, interesting character, and there is so much stuff that is serious about what I do with art, you know, with other forms of music and film that I love. A fear that I have is if this platform can take off in any form or another, am I ever going to be able to escape it, or will people only think of me as like the pizza boy? Do I have the ability to break out of, you know, said molds? Like people are like, oh, well, he's a pizza rapper, but now he's playing drums in a shoegaze band. Like, can people still take me seriously in that form? And can I break the mold that I potentially set up for myself?
So do you find it that the more possibilities that there are of succeeding as, you know, this platform kind of raises the fears a little bit more because it's a little bit more serious in that sense?
Does that make sense? Yeah, absolutely. I think there's more at stake.
That's it. Yeah. Like there's, yeah.
Yeah. But I think as long as I tread carefully and I think of a lot of people who, you know, have made those switch, people who are actors who have become musicians or vice versa, or who can, you know, make their way into film. Like, I'm not an actor, but who knows? If someone came to me and was like, I have a role written for you that is very inspired by your music persona, would you do it? I'd be like, hell yeah, absolutely. If people know me as Pepperoni Prada and can be like, oh, dude, Pepperoni Prada's in this movie. Or yeah, they featured Pepperoni Prada. And that's the other thing too, is I feature a lot of artists who take their art very seriously, like serious rappers.
Right.
And rarely, I've only had one instance where I've collaborated with another artist, but he's a serious artist. And the only reason we're collaborating is because his name is Pizza Dates. Shout out to Pizza Dates from Australia. But like, I can't think of anybody in their right mind who would consider asking Pepperoni Prada to feature on their album, unless they just like care about the vibe. Right. Like, I get it. Like, that's deterring to me. Sometimes I'm like, oh man, I wish people would want to collaborate with me more like on their projects, but that's not what this platform is about. And hopefully the project can grow into bringing, I don't know if on the caliber of Snoop Dogg and like Kendrick Lamar, but I would love to work with serious artists who are large and who I love, who I've grown up listening to, like Vince Staples and Denzel Curry and Freddie Gibbs and stuff like that. Like, that's a dream come true. If they're willing to just be like, yeah, this is stupid and fun and this could be fucking cool. I'll make a pizza rap song. Yeah.
So I guess a question that's on my mind now, since it's a pizza, right?
Yeah.
Does pineapple go on pizza and pepperoni Prada's eyes?
You're asking pepperoni Prada or you're asking Dallin Crown?
Let's ask both.
Okay. Pepperoni Prada says no go, no way. The fruit does not belong on a pie. Just there's a song called PSA on my first mixtape, and that stands for pineapple sucks ass.
Does it really?
Yeah. And on that song, I talk about the only fruit that goes on a pie is tomato sauce, or like is tomatoes, because it's, you know, because it's arguably a vegetable, but that's the only exception. And if you ask Dallin if pineapple goes on pizza, I don't care what you put on your pizza, man. Like, if you got a piping hot slice of pepperoni pizza and you're like, oops, there's pineapple on it, I'm not going to gag. I'll be like, okay, cool, whatever. I'll eat it. Yeah, don't tell anybody, though. Don't tell anybody I said that. He's a fraud. He's a fake.
Pineapple sucks ass. That's funny.
Thanks, man. I think it started because, you know, rappers have to have a beef with someone or something. You know, they have something to shit talk. And it was easy. I was just like, oh, yeah, dude, that's such a polarizing idea. People either love pineapple on pizza or they hate it. So I'm going to say that I hate it. That's a hot take.
Well, I found out it's easy to piss off people who love spaghetti. Because I this is a true story. Sometimes I put a dab of mayo on my spaghetti, like after it's on the plate. When people find that out, they're like, dude, what the fuck?
Well, do you like kind of like stir it in?
Yeah, stir it in. Like, I don't put it in the sauce, you know, like while the sauce is cooking or whatever. It's just while the spaghetti and the sauce are on the plate, you just put a dab of mayo and then you stir it around and eat it. Like,
I don't see anything wrong with that, dude.
Thank you. And it's actually really good.
Like, people make like super super tasty sauces and stuff by putting little bits of like Dijon mustard. And if you don't tell people it's in there, they would have no idea. But you put a name to something, like, yes, I put mayo in my spaghetti. People are like, that sounds freaking weird. And honestly, anybody who says that shit sounds gross, like, have they tried it? I don't know. Like, people always talk about fucking like peanut butter on pickles. Maybe it's good.
That's a thing too,
I guess. I don't know.
Hey, see, here's the thing. I'm willing to try it. Like, I like food.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the day, I used to eat tortillas with jelly on it, and that's it, you know, like, fucking thing.
A tortilla is pretty much bread. I don't know.
But okay, Dallin, what's one piece of advice that has stuck to you throughout the years and how do you apply it?
As simple as it is, as my friend Shia LaBeouf once said, just do it. I would say that that's a Nike thing, but Pepperoni Prada is an Adidas boy. So I try to be careful with my references to the Czechs. Not the Czechs as in people from Europe, but people who like Nike. I know that made me sound simple on the outside, but you know, I had many conversations with my producers and my engineers. I should say singular producer and engineer who helped me on my most recent project. And you know, when we were all done, he was like, this is the first big project that I've been a part of that I've like seen front to back, you know. He's like, I haven't really put out any of my own stuff, and like, he's doing the work, but it goes back to that thing that we talked about in terms of like, there are people who write and rewrite and rewrite and never publish, and then there's those who publish. And at a certain point, you just have to do it. And I think, you know, with my experience in previous projects and trying different things, this project has certainly shown that like, it might not work at all. All of you listening, like, you might have this crazy idea and it might not work. It might be not even that it's a shit idea. It just might not work. You might not execute it correctly. You miss all the shots you don't take, you know, like, And unfortunately, that is so true. Like, my friend on a whim said, you should try making a pizza rap song. I was like, okay. And then I thought about it, and I was like, this might have some potential. Like, who knows what I can do with this? Who knows what I can get away with? And I still have yet to find out what more people are going to let me get away with, you know, in this project. So simply, if you have an idea, they say in Dune that fear is the mind killer. You know, and that couldn't be more true. There's so many things that I want to do, and I psych myself out all the time. I'm like, oh, dude, I want to be able to play guitar in a new wave band. I don't know how to play guitar very well at all, but there's nothing stopping me from posting up in my room and putting on some drum machines and a bunch of reverb and delay and trying to figure it out
Right.
and trying it for a couple of years. It's like, eh, not my thing. Or, oh, hell yeah, I really love this. I'm going to keep trying it. Yeah. So just do it. I would say first, just try it and then just do it because you honestly have no idea. And it's easy to get kind of tunnel vision, especially when you live in a certain part of the country. Sometimes it's like, nobody here. Like I live in Idaho, right? The potato town or whatever. It's probably not the best place for rap music or even, you know, satirical nerd rap to thrive. It's probably one of the worst places, actually. But it doesn't mean I'm going to stop doing it because it doesn't work as well here. I still have so many opportunities to try to bring it to those other places, whether it's Portland, Seattle, probably a little bit better in Utah, California. It's just a matter of time, right? So, and those game plans come later. And sometimes, you know, the starting a project is the hardest because you think you need this, you think you need that. Like, oh, I'm going to start making this rap project when I've written enough verses. Well, just like start writing verses, like write one and record it. Oh, I'll start, you know, producing music, you know, once I have the right equipment. Well, there's so many people who like produce music. Madlib, who's one of my favorite producers of all time, he produces on an iPad, dude. Like, you don't need all the analog stuff. And I tell myself this all the time. You need this. You need an analog drum machine. You need a better keyboard. You need a better guitar, whatever. Do I need it or do I want it? Like, people make films on their phones. People will start a podcast with the microphone on their phone. Like, YouTube is free, man. Like, YouTube is free. And it's fairly inexpensive to get your music out on streaming platforms. And use the resources that you can find. A lot of times people, you know, in the digital world, you make friends around the world or around the country, and you might not have friends right next to you. Doesn't mean they can't help. Even if it's like, hey, you know, could you pre-order my song on iTunes? It would mean a lot. Or like, hey, do you have anybody who has access to this, that, and the other? So that's kind of a long answer, but I think it's true. And it's hard to remind myself of that when you're in the, you know, in the meat of it, when you're in the process of making something. There's so many times where I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's not worth it. Or like, oh, my social media engagement is shit right now. I'm just gonna stop. Why, dude? Like, you've already come so far until someone threatens for you to stop doing it, you know, until Sprite gives me a cease and desist or you know, PepsiCo because I shit on Sierra Mist all the time. Until someone tells me to stop doing it, just do it, man. Like,
What is Sierra Mist's counterpart in Coke?
Sprite.
Is this right?
Yeah, so if any of you have listened to my music or plan to, you'll find quickly Pepperoni Prada drinks a lot of Sprite and he reps the Sprite. Right? A lot of other rappers, you know, drink lean or you know, the Henny, whatever it is. Pepperoni
Or
Prada drinks Sprite.
if you're posty, it's Bud Light.
Oh yeah, some Bud Light. Yes, we'll see. Even then, I'm more of a Pabst guy myself, but
Pabst draft beer is good. And by the way,
yeah.
Pabst, that's probably my go-to college beer. Like, you know, like
Right.
beer pong stuff is Pabst. People are like
Yeah,
Bud
and
Light or Coors Light. I'm like, nah, dude, Pabst.
they have a new Pabst. I think it's called Pabst. I don't know if it's called Pabst Ultra or something like that, but it's like 13%. Like, it's way more. I don't know if that translates into. I know Utah's got some really specific, like liquor and alcohol laws and tax. But I don't know. Yeah, if they have Pabst Ultra anywhere, I recommend. It's in a black can, I think. Anyway,
Well, yeah, I
I
wonder if
dig
our
I
liquor stores
digress.
have that. But
Good stuff.
excuse me. Well, Dallin, where can people find you, and what do you have coming up?
So most of my socials are consistent. It should be Pepperoni Prada Official. Most of what I do is on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I don't post as much on TikTok as I probably should. I'm on Twitter. I have a Facebook page. I just put out a new project. Hey, it's a little Pep. I'm super proud of it. It is definitely the best work that I've done so far. So if you like hip hop at all, regardless if it's serious or not, I think you should check it out. It's got a little bit of everything. It's got a little old school, new school, Brockhampton style stuff, trap, whatever. It's got a little bit of mix of everything. Super proud of it. Me and my producer and my collaborators worked really hard on it. That's everywhere, streaming anywhere you want. We also have physical CDs that are limited to 50 that are at pepperoniproduct.com, which are pretty awesome. Got some shows.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Does it cost more to produce vinyl?
It does, yeah. And there's a huge vinyl shortage right now too, so the price has only gone up. And so we will hopefully press the vinyl shortly when there isn't like a year wait. A lot of times it's like, oh, we want to get a vinyl press, but it's like a year out, or if we want it in 6 months, it's way more than we ever want to spend for it. So
yeah,
fingers crossed that the world, I don't want to say goes back to normal, because I think the world is ever changing. But, you know, once it gets to a point where we have enough vinyl for the indie artists to make more, we'll get that pressed as well. But
that's cool.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, and thanks for being the first guest in a bit.
Yeah, of course, man. I'm happy to.
Yeah, check out Pepperoni Prada. Dallin, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I know we talk every now and then, but
yeah,
we should keep more up on it.
Yeah, we could do one of these off camera too. People don't know that we're actually friends, but friends do talk once in a while.
They do, supposedly. I wouldn't know. I don't have many friends, but.
Oh, whatever.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, check out stuff. Check out the podcast and stuff. And Dallin, we'll talk soon, man.
Cool. Sounds good, man.